history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories there, stories that need to be told. We certainly don't want them to go untold because we want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we sure do learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and so often we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Today, I'm in Visalia, California, with a guy who spent the last 55 years here. He's going to turn 97 just before Christmas, World War II Navy veteran Mike Kalustian. You're not from the San Joaquin Valley here in California, though. You're from a different kind of climate. Where'd you grow up, Mike?
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Where it's cold.
Yeah. You know, we've had quite a few Armenian American veterans on this program, and so many of them had a life story just from their parents and what they went through that I think made it incredible that they were even here. Yeah. How much do you know about your own parents and how they escaped the Armenian genocide?
My dad was in World War One. My mother and her mother and her brother somehow escaped Turkey all the way somehow through to Marseille, France. And there she was invited by a relative to meet her husband. And they were married at an age where she never knew her husband, never knew him, never, except that he was from the same part of Turkey. My mother, by her uncle, Agopian, came all the way to South Milwaukee, where she resided, and her children.
So your father was in the U.S. Army in World War One.
Right, yeah.
So his family had immigrated earlier.
No, my dad, his folks got killed in the during the massacre in Turkey. My dad somehow got to America and joined the Army. And then after the war, my uncle introduced... Well, my mother was in an orphanage in Marseille somehow, and somehow Rolda invited his niece to come and meet my dad in New York. And there they got together and got married, and my mother was about maybe 12 years old at the time. My dad was working in a foundry at the time, and my mother was a mother and raised children. Her first child died, and then I was born. 3 years later, my sister was born. Then 4 years later, my brother Harry was born. And that was our story of the South Milwaukee going up.
So your mother was 13 when you were born.
Yeah.
And I'm just pressing back in here because this is so unlike what most of us are used to. Such an unusual situation. So your father, both of his parents were killed by the Ottoman Turks.
Right.
And your mother's parents also?
Yeah, except my mother. Her dad was killed by the genocide. My grandma somehow, with her son and daughter, migrated from Turkey to Marseille. In Marseille, France, my mother put in a orphanage, a suffer home. Mm-hmm. And there, an uncle introduced my mother to her husband-to-be. Never knew who he was. And they got married in New York and came to South Milwaukee, Wisconsin. There they grew up and had their children.
It's a pretty unusual and incredible story, isn't it?
Right. Well, in the little cemetery where she lived, she was Turkish-speaking and my dad was Armenian-speaking. So when they were in the orphanage, the home, my mother couldn't speak Turkish. She had to learn Armenian or she would get slapped in her hand. Don't talk Turkish. That's not good. Don't talk it. You talk Armenian. And so she got to learn Turkish through my dad. And then we had Armenian and we couldn't understand Turkish because we didn't know it at that time. Mm-hmm. But later in life, we got to learn the language.
How much of all of that did you understand as a young boy? Because that's a big deal there.
She would never explain the worst part about the war. She would just explain, no, that's no good. Don't talk. That's not good. Just listen to what I tell you. She never told us how my grandpa got killed, how they experienced from Turkey to France, Marseille.
And I don't want to overemphasize this, but, you know, to me, it seems almost miraculous that you exist because it's pretty unique that your mother, a young girl, was able to escape because a lot of girls in her circumstances did not escape.
Right.
Or they were taken by the Turks and made whatever.
See,
and your father, his parents are killed, and he gets here, and he earned his citizenship by serving in the Army in World War I.
Right.
What a story for you to be born into.
Right.
And while we're on that topic, because, you know, we hear on this program, we talk about World War II, and oftentimes that involves the Holocaust and what the Nazi regime did to its prisoners. But the issue of World War I and the Armenian genocide is still somehow debated and still denied by some people in the world.
Right.
How do you react to that when you catch wind of people saying, no, that didn't really happen?
Well, we have to fight the battle with them. We can't win the battle no matter what. They say, oh, no, that didn't happen. But I can tell it happened because my mother and her mother came all the way from Turkey and explained the massacre of how they survived. My mother got to Marseille, France, but a lot of relatives went to Syria, Iran. They're all dispersed. That's what they call diaspora, you know. They all went wherever. And my mother's home got to Marseille, France somehow and put her in a orphanage home.
Yeah. So you grew up with no grandparents.
Right.
And a mother who's still a child.
Yeah.
Really.
Right.
And this is during the Great Depression.
Right.
What do you remember about those early years in Milwaukee?
You know, we just grew up like we are. You know, we grew up as in it. We didn't have money. We didn't have money. We used to go up and down the alleys looking for stuff to sell to the junk man, you know. But we never did work anywhere in our industry like now. These kids get out of school, they can get a job right away. We didn't have anything. We didn't have any McDonald's or whatever. We had to go. And if you're older, you couldn't get a job because you were too young. So all we did was run on the going to Lake Michigan and swimming in the water and watching them. It's a fishing, whatever. Mm-hmm. We never did have any experience of working, making some money.
Do you remember having some ideas when you were a kid? Hey, when I grow up, this is what I'm going
to
do?
Well, when I was in high school, my idea was to join the Navy. I don't know how, but I wanted to join the Navy. And the guy from the Navy Department came to my home and wanted my mother to approve my dad to go in before high school in 1942. My mother says, no, you're not taking my son until he gets from high school. I want to see him graduate. He's the only one that's going to graduate from high school. So I finished high school in 1942, and I went and tried to help my folks out by helping a little bit. Then finally I said, Ma, I want to go in the Navy. And that's what happened. I got into the Navy, got into Great Lakes, got on the, whatever they call it, boot camp. Mm-hmm. And then from there we went by our train to San Francisco. From Francisco, we got on a battleship, San Francisco to Hawaii. In Hawaii, we got our ship at Pearl Harbor, and that was it.
Here in Visalia, throughout the San Joaquin Valley, people have become familiar with Armenian cuisine. Was there something your mother used to make, homemade Armenian food growing up?
Oh, yeah. My mother used to make, she had a rolling pin and dough. She would make dough, roll it out, and make this pinch, real thin dough. She cut it in squares and take each dough with a little piece of meat, inside ground beef, put in the meat there and pinch it like a wing nut. That was hard, but it was a little bit old. And then she could make cheese puff. Same thing, take the same dough, put bobs of cheese around, lift the other half of the other dough over and cut it out and fry it. But she used to make baklava like mad for me. That's back, and I didn't like it. She made lokum, that red candy looking thing.
Sunjit,
the Turkish delight.
Uh-huh.
She would make that. Whatever I wanted, she would make for me.
Grape leaves, too?
Grape leaves. We used to suffer because grape leaves, you can't find in Wisconsin. You had to go in a wooded area and look for a place, and we got poison ivy and whatever, trying to find grape leaves. Here in California, you got ivories, tons of ivories. Oh.
So you got poison ivy trying to find grape leaves.
Oh, yeah, I got poison ivy. Bad. I hated that. Ma, I don't want to. No, come on, we got to get grape leaves. Go to Racine, go to Kenosha, any wooded area, you look for grape leaves.
Never heard one like that. Well, you talked about wanting to go in the Navy and having to convince your parents. But before that, you know, something happened that I always like to ask about because it seems like everybody remembers December 7th, 1941.
Right.
So I'm guessing since your birthday is December 17th, you're just looking forward to turning 18.
Right.
And then something happened. So how did you find out about Pearl Harbor and what happened there?
Well, you know, it was a Sunday morning. I was on my way to Armenian Church. And by home, I stopped at, we had a place called the Cigar Store. It had four pool tables. So I went in there for a short time to see what was going on with the guys. And that's where war came over the radio. And that's when we knew that December 7th, the war was gone. And I said to my folks, oh, I want to go. She said, no, you're going to finish school. And that was my story about waiting to grant from 1942 until I got December.
Did that shock you at all that the Japanese attacked, that now America was at war? Or did you kind of see it coming?
You know how young kids are. You know, it was, hey, so we'll go there, we'll kill them, you know, we'll go fight, you know. But no, we weren't. I don't know if I had that kind of anger in there. I just know that it happened. I was on my way to church, and that was it.
So you get done with high school. You go into the Navy. What were you expecting? Did you have an idea of what you thought it was going to be like?
Well, I didn't expect to be. I didn't want to be in the engine room, but I just wanted fun to be in there and fight the war. And I don't know, I shouldn't tell you this. I don't know how to swim.
Oh, really?
I can't swim for a dime. I've tried Lake Michigan, I couldn't fight, and our school didn't have a pool. You know, my schools have a swimming pool. We didn't have a swimming pool, so I let them learn. Lake Michigan was always ice cold, and I didn't want to swim in the cold water. So I never learned how to swim. That didn't worry me about joining the Navy in case I got sunk or whatever. You know, I just figured, I'll go, yeah.
Well, that's, you just answered the question. I know everyone listening is asking in their minds. It's, why would you join the Navy if you don't know how to swim?
I never thought of it. I just joined the Navy because I liked it. And why I didn't want to go into war, I don't know. At boot camp, you had to swim the pool to, you know, it was one of the muster, or you go and get training for swimming. Mm-hmm. Well, I just somehow told a friend of mine to swim the pool, because their school had a pool. Cuddy, Wisconsin, had a pool. Mm-hmm. So Leland swam the pool for me, and said, go over there, you know, because first they told me, go over here, you're going to like swimming, because I jumped in the pool, and I went about 2 feet, and they had to pull me out, because I couldn't swim. I thought, dog feet, I couldn't do it. They said, go over here. I said, I'm not going to go swim in the pool. I heard about what they do, high dives in the oil and this. So I told Leland to swim the pool and tell me to give him my name so I don't have to go to the pool. And that's how I got out of
So he swam, got out, and told him, I'm Mike Kalustian.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he had to do it again for himself?
Yeah.
It was that easy to pull the wool over their eyes, huh?
Well, how many guys are in that pool jumping in a naked pool? I thought I could swim it. But boy, I tell you, from here, I don't know, 12 feet maybe? They pulled me out.
Were there any other challenges or obstacles in boot camp that you had to deal with?
No, that was other than the duties that we had. You know, like one job was cleaning the grease and stuff out of the sludge. What do you call those things? Traps.
Yeah.
Traps, yeah, clean that stinky thing. But most of them was okay. It was only 9 weeks of boot camp, and then from then we went on board ship. I took my couple of years, whatever, you get your rating for rating, and I go take my rating and got up to first class of machinery, man, in 4 years. So I was happy. I didn't do, you know, like these guys would gamble and this and that. I wouldn't. I just read my book and magazines or whatever, and that was it.
I was just wondering with, you know, what you described about your mother and how she really didn't want you to go. Was there an emotional moment when you had to say goodbye to her before you were going to be heading overseas?
When we were leaving to go to, yeah, I was kind of sad. I was disappointed in my mother that I didn't really stay home and help protect the family, you know. Mm-hmm. I just went off into the, not thinking about taking my folks, and went, I just helped my dad out. I just went to the Navy, and after I got on the ship, I said, you know, maybe I should have stayed home.
He would spend the better part of the next 3 years a long, long way from home aboard the cruiser USS New Orleans. We'll explore some of that when we come back. Check out photos of Mike Kaloustian then and now at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I've found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.